Bayern Munich became the only powerhouse team that lost at the UEFA Champions League in the past 2 days, considering that they also lost previously to Leverkusen in a key contest of the Bundesliga title race. These two games might have been the early deciders for them of this season. Welcome back to CGTN Sports Talk. I am your host, Li Xiang. I am glad to be joined by my colleague, Josh, here.
Great to be back.
Hey, so I thought it was going to be tough for Bayern. I really didn't think they're going to lose to Lazio, even by one goal.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, like I knew it'd be a struggle because, like you were saying then, with the Bundesliga, It's been very difficult. And of all these games, I think the last time we spoke about this, of all these games, this one seemed most primed for an upset.
Oh, yeah.
But I wasn't anticipating it to go like this because Bayern, for me, like, when you talk about like a team's DNA, Bayern is always like a high pressure, constant force, always working. And this team under Thomas Tuchel, who is a manager who's implemented that everywhere he's been, they just seem so lackadaisical and so clumsy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the goal coming from a penalty from Upamecano getting a red card, like, I wouldn't have said this is how it's going to go. But if you were to ask me beforehand who's going to be the weak link, who's going to cause the mistake if there was to be an upset, I would have said Upamecano because he's been dreadful for a very long time.
Yeah.
And when he had that tackle, it was such a weird situation because the ball's being played through. I think it was Immobile who was pushing it forward. And he was just kind of running past these defenders, running through them. And no one wanted to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Then he moves horizontally and Upamecano just crunches into him in a way that he was going for the ball, but with so much force that he just snapped the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really, really embarrassing. And then once they had that one, Lazio realized they were kind of fine because it was pretty deep into the game. I want to say about the 70th, 75th minute. And Bayern simply didn't respond as if they were a goal down. And it's gone from being this sign almost of arrogance. We'll talk about Manchester City later on, but The big teams do sometimes play with arrogance. This seems more a case of, here's a team which plays in second gear and doesn't have a first. And that's not something I'm used to seeing from a Bayern side. And, you know, let's be honest, this is a Bayern side that has Harry Kane, Thomas Müller, Manuel Neuer still in goal. Matthijs de Ligt came off the bench. There's a lot of good players here.
Yeah.
Maybe not to the typical quality. I do still think the wingers with Leroy Sané on one side and Jamal Musiala on the other, Not the best pairing, but they're still very active on the flank, still great at creating chances. And yet, when they were up against a Lazio side that just basically played with will more so than anything else, you had players like Marisic and Romagnoli who were always closing them down, just causing a lot of trouble in the back four where they were, making sure there's a lack of space, lack of movement. They had no other answers. Like I was saying, there's no first gear, there's no plan B. And that is really bad when you don't have a second gear, a plan A, a killer instinct that can guarantee you wins. And now we're at this odd point where, you know, with this Bayern Munich squad, they got rid of Julian Nagelsmann with the idea that Thomas Tuchel would be the guy to take them to this next level where they are constantly in finals, constantly winning trophies. And instead, it's gone the other way. And I simply don't know what the explanation is because all the pieces are there. It's not just turning into a complete puzzle.
That's true. I think you're very right about saying that all the pieces are there. I think what went wrong was the attitude, because after they lost Leverkusen and after this game, between this game and that game, I was reading and I agreed with this kind of view, was that they had all the good players, but they're not playing with the right attitude. Let's see. Say Kimmich was there. Gretzka was there, Musiala was there. These are all better players than their counterparts in Lazio, and I'm pretty sure better than their Leverkusen counterparts. They just didn't work hard enough on both ends. Like, they didn't run. They were, like, waiting there to get the ball, and then, oh, yeah, now it's my time, it's my show. But they let the opponent's defenders to just separate them very easily. I mean, Lazio and Leverkusen, they were all playing to win with the right attitude because, like, oh yeah, we were playing against Bayern. We were willing to give up control of the ball. We were willing to give up everything, but we're going to make them very uncomfortable, and we're going to exploit any mistake they made. And that's exactly the mistakes Bayern made. Their midfielders were so energyless, and they left their defense alive very vulnerable. And then there was Upamecano. He, like you said, he works so much with force, but he's not a, let's just say, a smart defender. And when the whole defensive line was so vulnerable, you know something wrong is going to happen. And when that happened, again, you mentioned it so perfectly that Bayern didn't have a plan B. And it's like they didn't realize, oh, yeah, we were one goal down. Yes, you were one goal down. You need to change your pace. And they lacked that player. They didn't have that pace changer anymore. Kimmich was not that guy. Goretzka was not that guy. Actually, this team reminded me of the... it was 2024 now. Reminded me of the team of 16 years ago when Jurgen Klinsmann was their manager. They didn't have that player again. That's why they always seemed good but couldn't win. And I think this is a problem for both Bayern and German football because, like Manny said, German football was not that high-pressuring and tough and resilient thing anymore. And Bayern, as the engine of German football, maybe was dealing with the same problem.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned something then that I think is really interesting, which is the way the possession was in this game. Lazio were very willing to let Bayern Munich have the ball, which is kind of the opposite of how it's been with previous Bayern teams where Bayern get the ball and just don't let the other team have it. They just hold it and punish you for letting them hold it. Whereas here, you saw Lazio just kind of willing to let the midfield just pass it around, Goretzka go to Kimmich, and he go back to Goretzka, and then maybe go up to Müller. And they're just kind of letting them play this pattern. And then on the third or fourth movement, someone would swoop in, Luis Alberto, Guendouzi, someone like that, and then just pump the ball down the pitch, like catch them off guard. So it's gone from being buy and play a possession-based football that's all about holding the ball and putting a constant forward movement on it, to they hold the ball and they play for so long in these holding patterns that the opposing sides can just swamp them in terms of bodies, double coverage and things like that, and then grab hold of a loose pass and catch them on the break in ways that a team the size of Bayern, the team with the quality of players of Bayern, simply shouldn't be falling for.
Mm-hmm. And this really looked like the... let's say Barcelona in their late years, like at the end of their prime. And there was Pep Guardiola, who is now basically playing something similar in Man City, but they don't lack the energy to play. They don't lack the energy to beat Copenhagen 3-1.
Yeah, with that game, that was one where I did wonder if there was an upset on the cards because Copenhagen did get that goal in the 34th minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really nice goal. Like, it's one thing to be scrappy and force a goal or something like that, but they put a lot of pressure on Edison. He is used to playing out from the back, which I'm not so sure about that as a technique in general, because I feel like it does leave you exposed. But they put a lot of pressure on him. He messed up, and Magnus Madsen, who apparently was in his debut game for the team, put in that absolutely beautiful right-footed shot. And it showed that City do have a weakness in them. And it's the thing which I saw in the game against Everton last week in the Premier League. Yes, they won 2-0, but the first goal came in like the 70th minute. And that was after a whole game where they are similar to this Bayern side, where there's no real pace, no real energy to it. They'll play the way they want to. The difference is they're so technical that they don't really need to do it. Like, I believe it was Phil Foden's, his goal, the third one.
Mm-hmm.
The way De Bruyne slotted that ball through was absolutely perfect. Like, as soon as they get into that, the opponent's box, almost basically as soon as they're in the second half, and they apply not pressure in the typical sense where it's like man coverage and your midfields are pressing high. It's more a case of they'll have three or four guys very close to each other, almost in the ways of the old-fashioned tiki-taka. But then it'll be three guys who are near each other, and then someone will run through almost like a tight end in the NFL, the way Brady used to get to Wes Welker through the tiny gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they work. It isn't power, it isn't pace, it's precision. they will kill you by death from a thousand cuts.
That's
and
true.
If you are a team like Everton, who are very classic football, Sean Dyche, no messing around, it'll take 70 minutes, but they'll get there. Here, it only took 10. Then they just built on it and built on it and built on it. And eventually it just overwhelmed them. Because I don't think it's a surprise to see that the two later goals came in the 45th minute and the 92nd minute. Because it's right at the end of the half when everyone else is tired because they're mentally fatigued, having to watch where the ball's going. Is it going to be Silva to Foden or Foden to De Bruyne or De Bruyne to Grealish or whatever? And then once the fatigue sets in, the mental fatigue, the physical fatigue steps in next. And then when the goals happened, it was these little moments of magic where the back four of Copenhagen, who were in a lot of cases just left to their own devices, were just a second too slow, and City could take it.
That's true. So but what about the two injured players, Grealish and Silva? Do you think, because from what I could read this season about City was that they were not as dominant as before because they lacked Kevin De Bruyne for so long.
Mm-hmm.
He came back, and apparently they got better. They bounced back. But now, I don't know how long they will be playing without Grealish. A very, let's say, smart winger to me. And also Bernardo Silva. What impact will their absence have on City?
Yeah, you mentioned it perfectly with De Bruyne. He is, the heart and soul of that team. He's an absolute genius. I love watching him play.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see when he come back, suddenly that team went from being dangerous to being dangerous from every position because he can just do whatever he wants on wherever he wants. With Grealish being out there on the left, I'm not convinced by Grealish. I think he's a good player.
Mm.
But the way that this City side works is De Bruyne is the brain, which obviously cannot be replaced. But with someone like Jack Grealish, you get the feeling that he is like a finger. If it gets lost, there's still more on the hand, so to speak. And when they replace him with Jeremy Doku, Doku is a different kind of threat, but he is very fast, very threatening in front of goal, especially with Haaland there. Because Haaland is in this weird position now where he's not scoring as much as he has before. It's still a fantastic ratio. It's like he scored 80% of his games or something. I can't complain about that. But he draws defenders because they're so scared of him, which leaves someone like Jeremy Doku completely open. So when you lose a Grealish, you end up with a team where their bench is so deep, you just end up swapping out. Not like for like, but it's a similar situation. With Bernardo Silva, he is really good in that midfield alongside Rodri, and it's a different kind of midfield. Rodri's way more holding. He is, as we saw with that streak of games where they were losing when Rodri wasn't there, he has, as has been nicknamed, the dark arts of being able to put in cynical fouls without getting cards. Eventually caught up with him, yes, but it was only three games. Now he's back to being that holding midfielder who prevents attacks from going through. With Silva, he's a lot more creative going forward. And, to kind of extend my analogy perhaps a bit too far, if De Bruyne is this midfield attacking brain, he can only do it by getting service from behind. And a lot of that comes from Silva, because the genius of Pep is basically everyone on this team can be a threat.
Mm.
But you look at the back four, we have Nathan Ake and Kyle Walker on the wings. They are meant to clear it long. Stones and Diaz in the middle, they keep hold of the ball and get it back to Silva, who then finds the channel to find De Bruyne. So they replaced him with Matias Nunes, who, to be honest, I don't know too much about. He's kind of new to the team, along the lines of, say, the Oscar Bob, who was there for a while filling in on the right wing. And I don't know if Silva will be hard to replace, but I know he'll be a lot more difficult than Grealish. But that being said, his injury seemed a lot less severe than Grealish's one.
That's true. And I'm really glad that you mentioned the word long bench, because that's going to be something Real will be missing for a long time. Because, they won. They beat Leipzig 1-1, and Diaz scored a very pretty play. After that, he tributed to Jude Bellingham. And Bellingham won't be there for a month. Diaz suffered that injury too. I think now Real is looking at a very short list of choices for their midfield.
Yeah, because the thing with Jude Bellingham is he was brought in to be a midfield maestro. He was meant to be this great player who was meant to help move the ball faster, because you have Toni Kroos and Luka Modric who are, you know, way up there in their mid to late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So all he was meant to do was do what he did at Dortmund, where you move the ball very quickly with a lot of pace and a lot of skill, and you get it up to Rodrigo and Vinicius, who are strikers. And then if the moment arises, yeah, and you have an eye for goal, go for it. And instead, he's become this world-class player,
yeah,
who is just the star of that squad in ways that nobody anticipated. And the genius of Carlo Ancelotti is, I don't think he's the kind of guy to see that, then build his team around it. I think he's the kind of guy to look at that and say, okay, that's a bonus, and everybody else stay exactly what you're doing. So when they lose him, it's like going from playing at 120% down to 100%. Because, you know, Brahim Diaz isn't a bad player.
Mm.
He's just simply not this world-class player that Jude Bellingham is. And we saw from his goal, fantastic player. Like, you know, you know he's not at the same level, but he is still incredible in that midfield. And you almost have this situation now where the Ancelotti formation, typically kind of like the Christmas tree, it's now slightly inverted at the top. And you have Rodrigo and Vinicius, who are almost in that position I was saying about with Haaland, where the defenders know that they are so fast and so sneaky, we have to cover them. So they play in this position almost to part the Red Sea so the Diaz can get in the middle and score the goal, so the Bellingham can get through the middle. And that's kind of what we saw in this game as well, where Diaz was threatening all the way through, a lot more than Vinicius and Rodrigo were out on the flanks, because it's almost as if they're supposed to be running through and pulling Klosterman and Orban separately so that the other players can go in and score the goals. And ultimately, it paid off. I think that being said, I do think they were lucky because Leipzig did get that goal that was ruled offside.
Yeah.
And then when you saw in the replay, it was clearly onside to me. And then they were saying on commentary that apparently there was a push in the back of the goalkeeper. It was very, very slight. It didn't seem to make a difference to the keeper or anyone at all.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, you have Madrid getting the win. On the other hand, I don't think it was deserved. And if we were talking about upsets, I think Leipzig are poised to get something in the second leg.
Oh, yeah, that's true. From what I could see, especially from the second and third games we talk about, this is how difficult it is to win the Champions League. Because, yeah, it's called a league, but it's actually a tournament, but a very long one. We have so many strong teams in Europe, you know, Real, City, Bayern Munich, PSG. They all have top lineups, but there's only one champion. Sure, some always have the deeper pocket and deeper bench. The thing is, once you come out of the group stage, even during the group stage, you lose a player. Maybe it's not your best one, but it can be your top five one. And then, yeah, you lose plan A. Yeah, we have plan B. Then you lose plan B. We have plan C. Do you have plan D or plan E? So when you reach the very final stage, that's when your luck and your depth got really hardly tested. And I think on this front, City are still, at least so far, City and Real, they're better than others.
Yeah, no, I'd say they definitely are. But also, I think that when we were talking about this, I remember we were saying how each of these is like a giant versus a minnow.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't really fair. And that's kind of how it played out in basically every way, with the exception of the Lazio game. But at the same time, when I was watching these games, it looks like all of these big teams have an Achilles heel of one way or another, which makes me think that even though, yes, they did win, and we did mention PSG with Real Sociedad, like that 2-0 was just a mauling. It was weird how they got that first goal after a corner, because it was like almost a whole hour of sustained pressure where Sociedad just simply couldn't move. They were pressed in. And then the moment that there's a break in the pressure, Mbappe just sneaks in gets his foot on it, and knocks in that goal, and suddenly everything falls apart for Sociedad. Besides for that, where it's 2-0, I'm looking at the rest of these games, and the margins, at least for the Bayern Lazio and Madrid Leipzig, you could really see a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
from both sides of them, because you can just see so many weaknesses in all these teams that, like, I kind of hate to say it, but in terms of, like, Champions League lineups, it might be, on one hand, was one-sided we've seen for a while in terms of the draw.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, like, there's no tasty clash I'm really looking forward to, because every team looks like they could crumble at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
So while I think that leaves it open perhaps for maybe Lazio to sneak all the way through and get a win, or Porto to get a miracle just before we change to the Swiss model, at the same time, going forward, I wonder of the quality of the football.
That's true, and that's something we're going to find out in the next week's four games in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of which, I think in those next ones, we're going to really see whether Arsenal and Napoli are legit.
That's true.
And I think that what we see from that makes me wonder if the real winner will be on that side of the draw.
Oh, that could be very possible. And I think that's all for today. Thank you for listening. Hopefully we'll be hearing from you guys very soon next week. See ya.
Speak to you then. Bye-bye.